Welcome back to the Content That Grows podcast. I'm your host, Nate Turner, and today we are going to be talking about the elements of a comprehensive organic growth strategy. To talk about it with me today is my co-founder, Kevin King. What's up, Kevin?
Not much, Nate. How are you doing?
Doing well. So excited to get into this topic. You know, we've, I think, hit on different parts of it, you know, over the last, you know, many different episodes, but really kind of continuing along the theme that, like, SEO and, you know, creating content for SEO cannot be your entire strategy. A lot has changed even in just the last few years. And so we're going to go into some of the deeper aspects of the SEO side of it, but then also kind of talk about what really makes that well-rounded and, what we, like I said, comprehensive, to really make sure that you're, you know, organic being, you know, not just SEO and organic search, but really all things non-paid. And how you kind of build out a strategy is going to help your company keep growing. So I think we've done it a few times before, and we've got to do it again. And that's starting with what we consider probably one of the most important and foundational aspects of it, which is just understanding the ICP that's being targeted and how they buy, pain points, all that stuff. So Kevin, if you want to start us off there and just kind of open up why that's where we start.
Understanding ICP, ideal customer persona or ideal customer profile, however you put it, is critical to just understanding exactly like the types of content or like what you should be writing about or creating content about, regardless of channel. And that's really the most important part of it for your organic growth strategy, right? Just informing content creation and ultimately your strategy across all channels. I'd say, just to put it very succinctly.
Yeah. I think it's, we've talked before about, you know, it's no longer about just jumping into Ahrefs or SEMrush and pulling a list of topics and, you know, running through those through ClearScope or any other similar tool. Like, that's not, it's not that you can't make some progress there, but there's so much, you know, more on, really understanding search intent, tying that to your audience, having consistency across, you know, all the content on your site, the authority that you have to talk about those topics. And then most importantly, just not, you know, making search volume your number one priority, but really understanding the things that are most important to who you ultimately want to attract to your website, you know, the pain points they have and how you can help solve those problems for them. I think just continues to be the number one. And you made a comment around, like, regardless of channel, and that again is true. Like, you put all this time and care into the SEO side of it and then just crank out generic stuff on social or in a newsletter or on your podcast. It's the same goes to those others, is really understanding where your audience spends time, what's important to them, and bringing that same level of care and craft into those other channels as you're distributing content as well.
Yeah. And I think it can also just be the jumping off point for every type or every piece of content, or at least topic, let's say, that you want to create content around. And then you can start to do your, you know, your Ahrefs and things like that, that like start to build on top of it. And it actually makes the whole strategy a lot more well-rounded and holistic across everything that you're going to be doing, because you're starting with what they need versus, to your point, what the data is telling you.
Yeah.
Now the data has more justification with the understanding of the pain points and everything that they need.
Yep. Yeah. And I think that, you know, sort of flows into the next point, which is, like, you know, obviously if you're in-house, you're naturally going to be better at this, just because you're in it, you know, all day, every day. But, you know, from us as an agency, we have, you know, process and steps in place to facilitate, and that's just gaining, you know, deep knowledge of the products and or services, and really understanding that. So I think that's a, you know, critical part as well. You know, there's a lot of discussion and focus sometimes around, like, products that are focused on developers, you know, and there's kind of this notorious, like, they're very can be very picky is probably not the right word, but, like, just really will sniff out anything that doesn't feel authentic and like, you know, written by someone who understands their, you know, has their level of understanding. So same could be true if you're targeting, you know, chief information officers or, you know, a lot of different very technical type of space. Is really important, but I don't think that that is where it's limited to. I think it really is important to carry that through, even if it's MarTech or other B2B services. Like, you are still in need of really having that deep product understanding and understanding why, you know, why it matters to them and what it can actually do for them versus sort of like generic top level product understanding.
Totally. It's something that every marketer organic that's focused on organic channels, that's focused on content strategy, like really needs to spend time on other to get like actual buy-in, probably even more like convicted buy-in on whatever strategy or roadmap you're going to end up building. Because we see it now all the time where it's just, you know, if you go and select a bunch of stuff, like you said, if you're focusing on SEO or just trying to think about like what you think would make logical sense to create content around, if it doesn't really like really, if you can't naturally mention the product in a good way, you can create those tiers. A lot of people approach that, think about that with like this, you know, product-led frameworks mm-hmm. as it relates to SEO or anything content, product-led content marketing, etc. Like, can you associate your product with it? And like then levels of how basically relevant the product is within pieces, and you can score them that way. I've seen that done a plenty of times, but that's a good way to like make sure that you are choosing and going or creating content around things that are like really, really, really tie back to the product. And to close the loop on it, it just means you have to know a lot about how the product works, how it functions, its actual benefits, and what it's good at, you know, what it's bad at, et cetera.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, and we've had some prior conversations. I should probably be better at knowing what episode numbers to reference for, you know, for callbacks. But I know we've gone a bit deeper in the product-led growth side of that as well. So we don't need to spend a lot of time on it, but like, obviously then if you have a PLG motion for your product and your company, then that's the next logical piece there, is like being able to use templates or, you know, drop them directly into a specific part of your product with, you know, free sign up. Like you start to create some really, really solid inroads there. But even, you know, for a more sales led option or a more enterprise demo request, like there's still ways that you could have a better understanding of kind of how to tailor that demo and put that through based on some of that interaction on your site. So important from, like you said, the strategy side, but then also just like kind of tying into that conversion and helping people through that next step. And then, you know, so I think the next piece or the, you know, the next thing on our list essentially, which I'd love to spend a bit of time on, is like the competitive analysis side. And so obviously there's some, you know, default reports you can pull in different tools and kind of look at competitive sets, and certainly from a search standpoint, and are you looking at backlinks, like a lot of different things you can analyze competitors pretty objectively. But I think it's important to, I would love for you to kind of chime in, I guess, on like what some of the things are that matter more than others, because not everything is just about trying to get parity with competitors. Sometimes there aren't, you know, there isn't a clear competitor in the space, or you're trying, you know, like I said, you're trying to blaze a different path. Like, there could be a lot of variables that's not just a, you know, click these three default reports and spit something out. So, and where do you kind of start, you know, when we do this kind of stuff, like, what do you want to look at? What do you think about from a competitive analysis standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, it's so important. And there's a lot of different ways you can approach it. I think one of the things that I find interesting about competitive analysis and competitive gap and all that is that there is, to your point, this kind of stigma associated with it to some extent. I think that people are like, yeah, you're just like, you know, copying, you're looking to see what people are doing so you can do it, right? Like, it's so much more nuanced than that. It's in a lot of ways validating things that you shouldn't do, right? Like, let's go and, hey, I know this topic or this piece of content that we should create is super relevant. Let's go do research and understand just like what people are saying, maybe because we want to avoid it. Or avoid those things. It's not accurate. Like, if you have, you know, understanding of ICP and deep knowledge of products and services, then you can go out there and sniff a search engine result page out and call out that like half of these things don't matter, right? Which is interesting, because then that gets into the territory now of like, which I think we have approached this for a while, and I think lately it's getting this like label as of information gain, which is a hot topic right now, especially in the SEO world. But it's differentiation at the end of the day, right? It's like, how do you go to do that deep research to understand like what isn't there, and how do I actually provide value to the end user? So I think those are like two critical pieces. I think probably maybe the most important about it, outside of like, just getting an understanding of like the data. I think that's straightforward, and that comes with every type of competitive analysis. Like, oh, what can we gain from creating this? Then you can see someone created it a year ago, 2 years ago, 6 months ago, whatever. Yeah. But that's all, I think, straightforward. But the other two things, I think, are like the best approaches to, or at least perspective or mindset you should have when approaching competitor analysis.
Yeah. And two things you said that I wanted to expand on a little bit. One is like what not to do, you know? And so I think that's, you know, even if you're looking at third-party data, you can sometimes have a pretty good idea of like, oh yeah, they did build out this entire section of their website, and there's, you know, 50, 100, 200 posts in here or something like that. And you can see that it really doesn't drive anything material. And you kind of be like, oh, okay. Well, just looking from the outside, you'd think this is very successful. They have it, we don't. But, you know, even just a being a bit more critical, you could kind of understand that there's some maybe less overall impact to be had there. And then the other you mentioned, I wanted to call out because I think it's probably the most important part, is you have the ICP, you understand how they buy, you have deep knowledge of the products or services, and you're doing the competitive analysis through that lens. And I think that's what really differentiates versus just what's spit out from a tool. And, you know, the gap, like, who cares about the gap if literally that entire gap does not matter to your ICP or is redundant or, you know, whatever. Like, there's a number of reasons why that might be the case. So I think that, to me, is probably the most critical part that you mentioned, and really understanding that, because it, like I said before, it's not just about trying to get parity with who's out there, but really through that lens, determining what could be good and what wouldn't. So
yeah, that's great.
And then, you know, technical foundation is another one. I think we get asked about this a fair amount. Like, do I need to wait to start a program until I have, you know, whatever, a certain domain authority or a certain number of backlinks, or do I have to wait until, you know, we resolve these few technical issues and whatnot? And so, yeah, I think that's a good area to discuss too, because it's, you know, I may be just kind of calling out, you know, in the context of this conversation, which is a comprehensive organic growth strategy, like, what are the parts that are critical? What are the parts that, you know, you look for, with new clients, and kind of understanding like, hey, this is a big deal, or this isn't a big deal, or we can do it in tandem with other work. All that kind of stuff, I think, would be great to touch on.
Yeah. I think that it's a few key things that always come up. So I'd actually try to simplify this, because I think people get very intimidated when you start talking things technical. But in the realm of like making sure, obviously, the property, the website that you have that's trying to obviously position your product in the best way possible for growth, is the Core Web Vitals is something that comes up all the time. I know that that is an organic focused function, but like, it's a user experience thing. So page speed, making sure everything is really, really as fast as it can be, and, you know, adhering to all the best practices and standards that algorithms and all that want to see, right? So there's a lot of to that, but that comes up the most often. And so I'll put that there for now. And then site structure, however you want to look at that from like a hierarchy standpoint, like are your subfolders correctly structured, and is your content in the right places? Have you mapped it to the right areas of the site to position it in the best possible way for success? And then like a subset or component of that would be internal linking. I'd say those like three things are, when we talk to prospects and are potentially going to work with someone, like I look at all those things. They're some of the most obvious things you can catch right away to go like, ooh, this is going to be a limiter to growth if this isn't in good shape. So I'd say like having that at the very base, especially if you're just starting out, is like make sure the site's user experience and speed is up to par. Structure is there, my right subfolders, and then make sure everything connects in an intuitive way and isn't like in any way gaming the system. But yeah, that, if you just think about it logically, it's going to be in a good place.
Yep. Yeah, we in a recent prior episode covered some of the most common issues when migrating to new CMS. So that kind of covers some of that. And then Kevin and I, an episode coming up soon, we'll actually also be going through a list of the most common technical SEO issues. So we'll certainly be able to go a bit deeper into some of that stuff you mentioned there, but I think it's helpful just to at least call out some of the most common, especially in the context, again, of this broader strategy. And I think, you know, the biggest thing, content takes time, you know? And so it's like, in most cases, unless there's something that would like completely undo the work that's been done, you know, would like cause you to have to do it again, which I struggle to even come up with an example of what that would be. There's typically not a lot of harm in like starting the content creation process, because you're still going to want that content. You're going to need that content. It takes a while for it to build up. Again, you can be promoting it, distributing it on other channels, that, you know, it shouldn't be something that you have to like, let's wait 3 to 6 months until we get all this technical stuff resolved to then start creating content and, you know, and distributing and executing on it. I think there's a lot to be said for doing both in parallel, and then as you resolve the technical stuff, you've already been creating content. You have more to kind of pick up pace and just a running start there. So to more directly answer that question I kind of opened with, I think that in most cases, it shouldn't be something that you have to wait and address that. I think the biggest thing would just be bandwidth, you know, if it were a prioritization. But yeah, and so then let's go into the specifically kind of through the SEO lens, you know, evaluating organic search opportunity. You know, again, this as an industry and just marketers in general, we so heavily over indexed, I think, on like blog content being, you know, content led growth or content led SEO. Like, it became the default of like in people's minds of like, we should do this. And I think that there's more than just blog content when you think about the organic search opportunity. And so would love for you to kind of, again, sort of as you're looking at, you know, a prospective client, or, you know, we're doing a strategy audit for people, like what's kind of the full picture that you're looking at when you think about organic search opportunity?
Yeah. It kind of goes back to the last point, even about the technical foundation, is I look at a lot of the you know, site structure. Obviously, if a website's a little further along in their content journey, just to understand where they're putting all of their, like placing all their content bets, I guess.
Yeah.
But if you're just starting out, I mean, it makes sense that people would kick off with just a blog. I think like now that's gotten a little bit of a bad rap because it's just the place where you typically publish written content. Mm-hmm. But I think what's important to consider is, there's all, you mentioned it earlier about templates, and I know we've talked a lot about that type of stuff when it comes to product led, is just like understanding, and it also ties back to like the ICP and how they buy, is just like, what are the types of content that they're gonna want, right? We know that there's gonna be some path for written content that'll be published in your / blog subfolder or whatever you call it. It's being strategic about then how you actually, what you write, considering where those things, those topics and ultimately resources should be within that journey or funnel, and then positioning them in a way that's intuitive and gets people to go further through the site. I know that sounds kind of a little like it's high level, but like I think that in order to understand your path for a organic like content strategy, you need to think about what those things are. And like I know the scalable programmatic things are part of that as well. Like, is there opportunity for that? Like, you know, we see glossaries all the time. You look at a competitive gap, you see that someone created that. There's tons of traffic being generated. It's understanding if those things ultimately are necessary for your audience, or if they're just traffic grabs, or are they authority builders? Mm-hmm. Because it does help build out the domain expertise, quite literally, your domain rating. I think you just have to consider all the different aspects of like what your ICP is going to want, what the product can actually speak to accurately, and then categorizing it and creating a path for the different types of content that you should want to create that have opportunity in search. That is,
yeah, and I think the other thing there is we often find a lot of opportunities for just like core website pages, that you know, feature pages, solution pages, product pages, they're, you know, use cases, they come in different forms and whatnot. But, you know, it all kind of comes down to, you mentioned it, like what they need or what they're going to expect, but also, the search intent. And, you know, there are certain things that just ultimately, to really satisfy that and kind of write to that, like it ultimately is going to be more of a product page or something along those lines, that a blog post might be able to cover a lot of it, but ultimately that's more of where you need to build that. Or there's just a lot of we find, you know, libraries of content that would have a really logical place to point to you know, a lot of internal links to that section of the product or what the product does, the functionality, and it just isn't there. And so I think that tends to be another one that also, you know, if you're in the right space and you get it right, like it can drive, you know, tens of thousands of search visits a month to some of those core product pages too. So it can be another big one.
Yeah. I think also one thing with all this that I think becomes like a non-starter for marketers is overthinking a bit about how all of this should be structured, where they won't end up going and creating anything. I think to go back to my point about like the blog being this thing that is just where content's expected to be published, is like if you're small or starting out, don't have as many resources, you can always, you know, just, you wanted to try out some glossary topics, like go create that on your blog and see if it gains traction. You can restructure and start moving things around based off of like successful data. Right. It's a little bit more of a scrappy way to start, but you can test out all types of different content in a specific portion of the site and then start to organize and scale it in a way that makes sense once you have an understanding of it. Because I think a lot of times there's a hesitancy to, you know, invest in like, oh, well, let's go build these template, this theme that has templates and this and that, and they don't know if it's going to work or not. So sometimes it's worth placing those bets, but sometimes if you want to get a little bit of data first, you can start there and test all types of content in just one place.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it, yeah, always in favor of the scrappy approach that you can modify later on that, because yeah, at the end of the day, if it's, hey, we can do this and we're going to have to do it in the blog folder, or, you know, we might be able to get some developers to work on this 2 or 3 quarters from now to be able to build this thing out to do it the way we want. Like, yeah, just do it the scrappy way, gain some of those learnings. Maybe it'll actually help you to build out the stuff with the developers in a different way than what you were thinking based on what you learn or whatever. And then move it. So yeah, absolutely. Blog tends to be an area where the marketers have the most control via CMS and everything to be able to kind of execute and move quickly. So, yep, good stuff there. And then, you know, stepping then back out from specifically the organic search part of it, I think it's important to talk about inside the strategy, kind of where thought leadership in general fits in. So obviously there's a number of ways you can go through that. Like Ryan and I talked about research reports kind of being one aspect of thought leadership. Ryan and I are also talking about authority content, which covers a lot of different aspects of, different parts of thought leadership and podcasts and different things like that. So that's episode coming up next, where we'll be discussing that. So a lot of detail, I think, being covered in other ones, but like, let's just talk about kind of how this fits into the overall strategy and why it's important to have it and not just be all SEO focused.
Yeah. Well, I think how it fits in can ultimately be like a really true anchor for like the broader strategy that you're putting together that has, you know, your SEO content and your social content and all that, right? Like if you think about it proactively and you can identify the things that you really want to become a thought leader in, right? Which is a lot of times originating from C-suite and up, or maybe a founder or something, but that doesn't mean the rest of the team or other marketers can't like ideate what needs to happen there. Is ultimately they can become anchors, right? And you can then build out all the other stuff that isn't as, you know, straight from the brain of the founder type of topics that connect to that, ladder up to that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, one of the ways that we think we're thinking about this type of content is using that on a quarterly basis, right? You can anchor a couple thought leadership pieces throughout a quarter, or one or two if they're really big, meaty, kind of thought-provoking pieces, and then build around that to make sure that not only are you saying something truly unique to your audience and your ICP and all that, but connecting to the stuff that you know like they are searching for on like maybe a more 101 level, right? Like that top of funnel stuff, that the high intent stuff in the middle funnel that I think a lot of marketers these days just think view as kind of table stakes. So I think it's actually probably the thing that can be the differentiator in your content strategy ultimately, yeah, moving forward.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Ryan and I'll be going a bit deeper into like, the authority content that stands alone versus like, you know, we don't get into this now, but like our process for even creating content that's optimized for search still contains a lot of those components under the umbrella of differentiation. So we're getting the SME intake from our clients. We're, making sure that like unique point of view and their perspective on the topic is making its way into the content, which all kind of ladders into that. And so then, yes, obviously having some anchor pieces that are your company's perspective on the topic or kind of vision for where things are going, all that stuff is there. And ultimately, like, that's such a big part of what companies ultimately want to establish. And that's, you know, it's why we call it authority content, because that's what people want to become, the authority on those topics. And so you're right that it's helpful to anchor to those and then let the very search driven stuff kind of tie to that and help kind of pull people through. And and it just creates some good variety. You can repurpose those things in different ways and distribute them in different ways that I think ultimately just helps your overall marketing. What people see from your marketing doesn't feel monotonous and like just kind of on repeat. So a lot of good stuff there. Like I said, check out the research reports one that we just did, and then also the next one coming out on authority content will really cover a lot more of that. So I just mentioned distribution. I think none of this matters that much outside of that. You know, we've I say often like organic search is ultimately one form of distribution, and so thinking about overall organic growth, you know, we're trying to bring the right ICP in. Understanding what they're doing, have multiple types of content, but distribution becomes a really important piece of that, and let you kind of chime in on kind of what we typically see and are recommending.
Yeah. Yeah. Organic search, definitely one method of distribution. You know, obviously since that starts with a piece of content that you're deliberately trying to get out, like to take it beyond to other channels, it's all about like repurposing, right? So as a component of distribution, you know, taking a lot of pieces of content that you have and chopping them up into social posts or creating videos, right? Like that's how you can get to another distribution channel, being video, YouTube, all that. So I think it all starts ultimately with the written piece that you have and then coming up with all the different ways that you can get it onto these different channels to make sure that you're getting a lot of legs out of everything that you're creating. But I think ultimately distribution, we think about it, that is a lot of repurposing, because you can create one thing and get it out on all those different channels. But I think also something that's going to continue to gain more steam, especially with, you know, attribution and analytics sources or referral sources being less like obvious, is harder to track, is like seeing if you can get some traction on, you know, there's Slack channels and Slack groups and LinkedIn groups and all these different areas that I think are subsets of the like traditional channels that people are trying to get their content to gain traction on, mm-hmm. that I think are ultimately going to be the avenue too for a lot of this, not only thought leadership content, but just getting in front of your ICP or a unique audience that the content you're creating for is going to resonate, because the organic channel is just so broad, organic search that is, mm-hmm. that it's a way to, I guess to cap this, it's a way to like zero in on your audience, whereas organic search is just such a wider net, depending on where you focus it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think that I totally agree on like the repurposing side, and I think especially earlier stage companies, or even, you know, we talked to plenty of bigger companies that are still resource constrained. I mean, the goals just get bigger, and so it's not always a uniquely an early stage company problem, but just being smart about doing stuff that can be reused and, like you said, you know, repurposed, but just like do something once and it can turn into multiple things. And so I think, you know, that's a reason why we decided to start a podcast as early as we did in the life of our agency, was just knowing that like, hey, we have limited time for our own marketing. What's something we can do that kind of hits longer form, shorter clips, can go on social, can go on YouTube. And then we've also found ways to integrate clips into our blog posts and, you know, a number of things that just goes further. And so I think that that's a reason why podcasts have become quite popular on the B2B front for that reason. But just in general, I think, you know, no organic growth strategy is complete without really thinking through distribution. And then the last piece I'll say on that is like, there's, I think I've said before on this podcast, and I know I've said a lot outside of that as well, but like there's so many instances where it's just so easy for companies to get focused on, well, now I create this, now I create this, now I create this. And being realistic about the fact that like, just because you created that blog post or guide or, you know, research report or whatever, like 3 to 6 months ago, doesn't, like, you should still be just as proud to distribute that today as you were when you first created it. And for whatever reason, it's always just on to the next thing. And being realistic about, you know, actually how much you can repeatedly distribute the exact same things, you know, maybe slightly different ways, different channels. But I think that the companies that do that over time, I think, tend to see a force multiplier on just the reach and awareness and traction and all that stuff, for very, very obvious reasons. So, yeah. So, anything else you wanted to say on distribution before?
No, I think it's just, you gotta, it's critical. You gotta just keep exploring and testing out different channels. And I guess just don't limit it to thinking that, like, you know, you gotta just keep building LinkedIn. Try one, if it doesn't work, move on to another. Like, there's a way to explore everything. But it is critical. I agree with you to gaining traction.
Yep. Cool. And then, so just to wrap up, we talk a fair amount about, like, there's no one playbook, there's no magical growth hack or any of these other things that are going to be that thing that just transforms your progress and performance. And so, you know, that requires tailoring things, but then also the reality is, like, if there truly was a pinnacle playbook even a year or two ago, it may not even be relevant anymore, just because things change in the industry, content consumption trends change, like all kinds of stuff that it really does make it an evolving and changing thing. So anything you want to add on that part, Kevin?
Yeah, I just, it's so important to stay on top of all the quickly evolving things in our space. And, you know, the big one on the organic side or search side is algorithm updates. You know, for the past 18 months, probably 2 years, it's been helpful content update this, helpful content update that. It's good to understand it. It's best to not be totally reactive. Just understand it. Make sure that you're doing the right things. Have good fundamentals. Explore the new thing that comes up as it pertains to a new social network. Understand it. Try to understand it. But, like, you know, it's best to just make sure you're seeing all the opportunities out there, considering them, but not necessarily always going full steam ahead into them. And that goes for, you know, strategies, tactics, and just, like, new technology. Obviously, you know, AI is a big one that's happened. So I think it's critical for any organic growth strategy, because, you know, the time we've done it, how many things have changed. So
yeah,
I think it's really important to point out.
Yeah. So I think, yes, at the time, you know, if you're whatever going to sit down right now and map something out for the rest of the year or for the next 2 years or whatever you think it is, you have to consider where things are at now, but then also over time be willing to relook, you know, reassess the strategy that you laid out and understand if perhaps there's some things that are changing. Hey, this is becoming less effective, it's becoming more effective. And be willing to kind of, like, adapt over time and just keep a pulse on that and not develop a plan, put your head down and forget all about it. And please don't buy someone's playbook that promises everything and execute it blindly, because I don't think that really ever works well. So, but yeah, that's the gist. Anything else that we didn't cover that you want to hit on real quick, Kevin?
No, I actually think it was good to end on industry changes and all in that, because that's probably one of the hottest things right now that keeps everybody up at night is that. So
yep,
I think we covered it.
Yep. Yeah, and I mean, in general, like, this is largely encompassing, you know, the ongoing work we do with a lot of clients and just, like, the relationship that we have over time. We do also do, like, a comprehensive strategy audit, which is kind of going through a lot of these things in detail and just kind of helping companies get a snapshot of where they're at, where there's opportunity, what's critical or not, you know, looking at competitors, kind of all the stuff we talked through today, can also kind of roll that up into an audit, which is, you know, again, tailored to you and your unique situation, and kind of tease all that up for you. So with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up. It's good. So good to kind of chat through all the elements of the comprehensive organic growth strategy today. And if you want to check out any of the other episodes I mentioned, a number of that were recently done and will be coming out, visit 10speed.io/podcast. Like and subscribe on your platform of choice to get notified when the new ones come out. And I think that's all we have for today. So thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, Dave.